time. Okay, we're holding here in Medrash Tanhuma, I believe, right? Okay, so he brings a long chazal here. Zesha Makosev Hafoich Rishoyim Ve'enam, that if you turn Rishoyim upside down, they do not exist. Kolz Mashakas Baruchum is Hapech Masem Shoyim, Enlem Tkuma. Dora Mabos is a Mach Kolaikum, Stoimim Ve'afres Orim. Mitzrim Lanishabe Mal Echod, Bubble Vechrati Lebubble Shem Mesher, Oma David, Shom Noflo Pola Oven, Al Yisrael Im Noflo Oindim, Al Tismicha Yaftali Kinafalti Kamti, Vaoime, Ania Shemeshnisim Oilam, Loi Kesi Uma Veshanisila, Al Atem Yakov Lichlisem, Shenema Chitze Chalabam, Chitze Kolam Vemen and Kolam. Oksiv derech kashtoi v'atzivenu l'matora l'cheitz Moshma adarachdoim l'gibo shehemedes ha-koyre v'yemoyre b'chitzim achitzim kolim v'akoyre emedes Kach Yisro Yisroin kolim v'yemkoyim oimdim Lomenes chapash nitzom pashas kolos Lefi shesham Yisro mea kolos chose shtayim v'pash zu Chutz mat shenema bar Sinai Miyad oriku pneim omru miyucha lamoid be'elo Miyad koreis emoyshe v'yemefaisam Maxiv Lamaila Vikumashal call Yisrael, Hamasak also so on, Tovel Mok Mazer, Vizer, Ki Yisrael, Shay Surin Boyn Aleim, Henich Noin, Shinema Koisishus Essets of Yogan Emsa, Omakashpa calls him Kaims Eschel on a social Tifa Kisecho, Kachnema Atemitsov, and so on. So it's a long medrash, and it includes basically, I guess, in the big picture, it's Kolasa goes Vladi Yisurim, and they come out, I don't know if unscathed, but they come out surviving. Mashenkin umsoilam, it takes one shot and that's it. Now, before we go, so he over here explains the Yisurim as being that which helps a person, helps Klai Yisrael, and he says, "Vamedrezim mevayat dvaron shamarnu, ka Yisurim al tzadik losis ki meilo." So the first thing he says is the tachlis of Yisurim is to awaken and call Yisrael a tshuva, and so then the sense of this chazal would read as follows: that all Masailam HaKadosh Baruch Hu waits until it's over with. In other words, the punishment HaKadosh Baruch Hu meets out is when it's finished and over with. And therefore, they never recovered from any blows, because their blows came when they were chayv misa, and that's that. Masha'in can call Yisrael, their blow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them blows before it gets too late. And I guess that would be extremely similar to the Yisurim reflex that we have in us. The way our nervous system is built is to reflect to give us grief before it's too late, and the person looks for medical attention or does whatever he has to do, and he saves himself from going under. People who have no pain sensation, they will die much younger because they let many things untreated, they don't notice many things, and then it's too late. So the Umas Olam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he does land on them Yisurim, he lands on them when it's sort of a coup de grace, it's when it's gone. Klal Yisrael is HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Yisurim as a means to provoke them to do tshuva and so on. He adds a point over here. He doesn't say, one could have said it very simply. One could have said it, well, when things are wrong and bad, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends Yisurim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends Yisurim, we go and we do tshuva because of the Yisurim, and then we become good people. It doesn't say that in the Maral. The Maral says, "Kash kol oicha Yisurim boim aleim, he misalkim es p'chisa shalahem, hamar chagoysan Hashem Yisbarach, עד שהם קרמה של הספרק עשו לו כגוף החמרי, ונעשה נבדל דבקם ביספרק, ולפיכך קרם על הכשפרק ביסרוסה. It's almost not, it's not that their hatzola lie, it's not that they call out for hatzola, and part of what they do to be saved in a difficult matzav is tshuva and shina maisim and calling out HaKadosh Baruch Hu and so on. But rather, the Yisurim themselves have an effect, a positive effect of lifting them, a lifting Kal Yisrael out of their dveikus to Gashmius, and as they become more ruchnistic people, they b'meila call out HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'teiras anoshim ruchniyim. That's what he says here. It sounds it's similar to something the Ran says, Joshua Ran says, but Sar Lechom, it's a Uchu Kal Dvar Meilu. He speaks about it in Parshat Tzavim, when the Torah says things will become very, very difficult, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will, you'll cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then you'll do tshuva and so on. So the Ran speaks about doing tshuva out of difficulty. Is that a good tshuva or not? He says that the pasuk is maftiach, that it's a good tshuva, it's going to be mekubal. But the Ran gives it a certain framework, and he says, you know, sometimes, I go to a person and I tell him, would you like to contribute to a good cause? And the person says, not really. And that's that. If I take a gun to his head and I say, would you like now to contribute to a good cause, or would you rather leave it in the will? And he graciously chooses to do it now. That's not the pshat that the person really, really changed. It's just that the person made a new cheshbon, that the options are not great, and he'll part with his money. And that's it's not a change in attitude, but it's rather very pragmatic decision. So let's say Kal Yisrael does have heirs, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings Yisurim on them. And now they say, listen, I don't know why God doesn't let go, but we're getting the picture. If we do bad, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu will keep punishing us. Not so pleasant to be punished. So it'll be good that we'll do. That's not a real tshuva, and that doesn't help. But let's take and imagine that somebody came, a poor man came in the middle of winter and he was cold and I didn't give him a coat. And then I'm stuck somewhere and I don't have my coat and I'm freezing. And after an hour of it, I say, you know, I realize what it must have felt like and I should have given him a coat or something. So there, it took, the Yisurim gave me a new understanding and attitude towards what's right. So the Ran says, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings Yisurim to people, to Klal Yisrael, and those Yisurim create an effect that we do tshuva because we realize the emes of it, then that's good despite the fact that it came from Yisurim. Doesn't make a difference. Whatever it took to trigger the lesson, but today we're doing the good because it's good. Somebody's a big Baal Taiva, and then Yisurim weigh down on him, and he loses his taiva, and at some point he says, you know, it's much nobler to live without coarse taivas, and you know, I can be a more refined person, and so on. So the person has found refinement. But if a person just makes a calculating cheshbon, you know, I guess HaKadosh Baruch has proved himself, and if I want this, I'm going to have to do this. So then it's not real tshuva. So he's saying something very similar here. We cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because we've become refined from the Yisurim. It gives us a whole different perspective on life and so on. I once saw something as a young boy that I guess it made a very powerful impression on me. Maybe it was because I was kind of youngish and just the whole incident. There were two rabbinic ladies, Rebbetzins, in the area that I lived or associated with the school I went to, I don't remember. And there was a lot of politics and a lot of ill will and hard feelings between the two people, between two rabbanim and the two Rebbetzins and so on. And it had to do with, obviously, certain, you know, who should whose position should be ahead, something along those lines. And it was quite a difficult. It was not a soft. Let's put it that way. It was not a soft debate. It had echoed quite loudly. I think this went on for quite a while. I think for years, maybe more. I mean, I was a young boy, so I don't know what I grew into and what was there before. But one of the two became sick, quite sick, very sick, and she died from it eventually. So, at some point when she was quite ill, I guess they made up. At that point, I guess, you know, they made peace with each other, and that was that. I was standing at some function, some yeshiva function, or wedding or something, and the two Rebbetzins came together to a door. And, you know, each one started, now that they were reconciled, each one sort of ushered the other one in first. You go first, Rebbetzin, you go first, Rebbetzin. And the one who was sick turned to look at the other one and said, you know, what difference does it really make? I was just sort of standing there at that moment, and the way she said it, you know, it was sort of, you know, I've come to realization that who gets to go through the door first is not really the most important thing in life, and a realization born out of great difficulty. It was sort of a scene that stayed in my mind. So when a person goes through different yesurim, what is really a lot of schaimer tends to become worn down, and then b'meilu he's a mespalel, reaches out to Kadosh Baruch Hu, not because he needs him and he has no choice, but because he's now of a caliber to reach Kadosh Baruch Hu. So he says, "Ki so muslokim batzim apchisus." Rak mitzad acheten mitam prisus. So the really Klal Yisrael themselves are very refined and very close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's the chet that makes them be more prisus. Hayisurim shebon lahem lemak haprisus shnimtza behem v'nasu toirim. So that's quite clearly the morale's point over here, and so on. I'd like to...
Rabbi Lobianski?
Yes.
When you go through the Nevi'im, like in Yirmiyahu, it seems he'd be very happy if they would just make an intelligent calculation that it might be better not to be wiped out by Babel and these do tshuva.
So the general sense of that is mitoich shelo lishma bo lishma. You know, first let's get you doing. It's like kids in school. You use a lot of, you know, all sorts of side punishments and side rewards with the hope that once they get on the bandwagon, they will feel the pleasure of doing it itself. But Duran, I guess, is talking because over there we're talking about Achris Hayamim and Kaisel coming back to Akash Baruch and so on. One would think that the tshuva we're talking about is the real and final tshuva, and for it to be a real tshuva, it has to be that type of tshuva. I want to add another point here on the beginning. Maral doesn't say it here, but I think it's a very important point in the Medrash. First of all, the beginning of the Medrash definitely sounds to me more as a test rather than as a test or a symptom rather than this is what Kadosh Baruch Hu is doing in order to get something. He says, whenever Kadosh Baruch Hu is mahafer reshoim, hafer reshoim veinenu, abel kal Yisrael im nofla imdim. The mashmos is that it's there to demonstrate the difference in Klal Yisrael and Rishayim. I would also like to focus on the lashon hafoich Rishayim v'nenu, turn them upside down. It obviously is very reminiscent of vayehafach hazar ma'el hafich haston v'amora. The musik of being mehafich something. It's an interesting way of describing destroying. I mean, you know, a city I could understand, Vayahapach would be sort of to, you know, to turn the city upside down, kind of. You turn the houses down and plow onto the ground. But people, hard to see the word Hapach used. By the way, I guess for general knowledge, I knew a person in Eretz Yisrael. His name was Ismail Lifshitz Evracha. He was a very frum Jew, a German Jew, and not married, unfortunately. He had never married, unfortunately. Was an off-the-charts genius, especially in the world of languages. He could translate 22 languages into each other fluently. Amazing. He never figured out why he couldn't make a living that way. Why, when he put up a sign that he can do Welsh into Flemish, nobody really picked up on it, or, but whatever, that was the person. And one of the things he did, and unfortunately, I don't know if it's ever possible to get hold of it to publish it. He was a big batlan. He had no shakas to any, he was totally incompetent in anything Olam Hazeh. When I was working on the Siddur, I made use of him. I went down and went over a lot of things with him. I mean, it was amazing. Amazing. It was astounding. But, so he had a few thousand words in other languages that really came from Hebrew. You know, a lot of people just come up with these words. He really traced it. And one of the words, the word havoc is a Welsh word. It's English, comes from Welsh. That's what he told me. I'll take his word for it. It does have a lot of the Welsh sounds. And he said it traveled from the Hebrew hafoch. And being that either the Fey, I don't know, it traveled to England via the Romans. I don't remember the Shtickel Torah, but the F and the V gets reversed in many languages. They're especially, like, for instance, in Arabic, when they say Nablus, because in German, in Roman, it was Neapolis, and Nablus, they couldn't, the B and the P is, there are many languages, B and P doesn't work well, so havoc is hafoch. In that language, so to wreak havoc would be the v'yahafoy, hafoychbo, hafoychachoyim. So same word. Al kaponim, the word. So the word hafoch is very interesting. What does it mean in its origin? I mean, yes, colloquially we say, you know, I made a mess, I turned it upside down, but you're talking about destroying. So you burn it to the ground. What is that? So let's use the following illustration. If I take a matzah, or I take a ball of dough, a pure ball of dough, and I flip it up or down or sideways, it is one and the same. If I take a ball made out of rubber or foam, turn it, twist it up, down, sideways, either ways, makes no difference. If I take a cake, like a fancy wedding cake, there's a huge difference if you have it right up or you flip it upside down. The reason being that, so you have like this, you have substance. If let's say I give you a block of gold and you turn it upside down, inside out, whatever topological distortion you want to do to it, the gold is gold. It makes no difference. Okay, are you back on? Peter? Not yet.
I think we've lost most of the people here. Robiansky?
I'm here. I think Ephraim is here. No, I see Matthew. Ephraim, you're here?
Let's see.
Okay, start over. Hello? Hello? Type of feeling before, with all sorts of beepings in and out. Okay, so let's go back to the muscles. So let's say I have a ball of dough and I flip it up, down, sideways, inside out. It makes no difference because it's the substance that counts. The substance knows no direction. It's be'etzem dough. It's be'etzem dough, bread, whatever it is. If I have a cake, a wedding cake, with sort of a little figurines on top and the whole nine yards, you know, the columns, this and that, turning it upside down, inside out, makes a huge difference. Phenomenal difference. The answer is because it's really a construct. It's not be'etzem that. It's not that's what it is, but it's just sort of patched up. And therefore, if I change direction of it, then I have something very, very different. If I have a block of gold, it's worth the same no matter how you shape it, mold it, bang, whatever it is. It's by its weight. If I have something carved out of the gold, it makes a huge difference about how, what, why, when, where. All of the aspects of the thing itself is going to go into its value. And if I distort it, it lost its value. So it's similar to, I guess, if I can make something a tzustal to it, it's like what the Satan tainted by Eov. Kadosh Baruch Hu said Eov is flawless. Satan, now tell me what, tell me if I'm wrong. To which the Satan says, but it's flawless, I'm not arguing on it, but shake it up and it doesn't stay flawless, because it's something that works only in a certain configuration. So the difference, I have things that are true to the core, so that and therefore, no matter whatever direction you change it or shape it or do whatever you do with it, it will remain. And therefore, so if somebody is be'etzem a good-hearted person, or somebody's be'etzem a refined person, whatever it is, no matter how you will shake or turn or twist it, it's what it's going to be. Masha ein kein, if the person needs certain conditions, I, let's say, act very nicely because when people are around, I sort of like to project a nice image. So just shake me a bit, and then a whole different set of coordinates fall into place, and no longer is that the way it should be. I was reading something, it was kind of very, very shaking to me, actually. It was for Tisha B'Av. I spoke about a Polish, an Adam Godel in Poland. He was his name was Godel Eisner, and he had a fascinating story. He said there was a German guy who lived in Poland, and what they called Volksdeutschen. In other words, over the many years that he had sort of, gotten lost in Poland, either through, you know, one of these invasions and staying behind, whatever. He was ethnically German, but lived and grew up in Poland. And the Jews, and Rav Godel, you know, the Chassidish Jews, used him a lot for many services, because the fact that he spoke German was very close to Yiddish, and I guess he was a little more civilized than the Polish around him, and he was very close, very familiar. He spoke Yiddish fluently. I mean, it's not much, not that good. He knew all the Hebrew words. He knew all the Holach Yelechs of from Jews and Chassidish Yidden. He was basically, for all practical purposes, he was one of them, so to speak. When the Germans marched in, so he became a very important official on behalf of the Germans. And in the ghetto, he was sort of a commander of sorts. He had a lot of power. And he related conversations like, you know, the Ger Rebbe had a grandson there. And the guy told him, like in Yiddish, gone are the days. It's no more the days when you grab your spadik, run off, and you sit under the Rebbe's table, this and that. We don't know any achsonim anymore. The Rebbe's grandson means nothing to us, and that. And his whole cultural affinity with the Jews had become, had disintegrated, disappeared, and he obviously used it to the bad. Like, he knew who had money and where they had money. Like, he was shaking down somebody for his money, and the guy was protesting, he has the money, and he said, quietly in Yiddish, he told him, I don't have Ruach HaKodesh. I know exactly, you know, it's not Ruach HaKodesh. I know exactly where your money is, and you have your choice. Give it to me, or that's the end of it. And it was amazing to see a person that you had been, that you felt basically, if you know, it was 98% kin. Like, you know, he was Hamish, he spoke your language, he understood your culture, he was kind of happy to be involved in it, and so on. And then, you know, fortunes turned, and this gone, nothing. My father told me similar stories in the Lithuanian ghetto, in the Kovno ghetto. You know, also where there were people that had very good connections. There were occasionally people that rose to occasion, and you know, they kept their level of at least they didn't do anything bad. And there were people that it was like, what happened to you know, 35, 40 years of friendship, kinship, and you know, very closeness. But actually, Hafeichba means the final. There's never ever a question of, you know, comparing a person who looks evil and bad to a person who is a tzaddik. I mean, obviously, this is bad. This is good. That's not where we need. It's Hafeichba whenever you have. The Russia is turned upside down. His apparent tzidkus and his apparent goodness and his apparent ideals just fall by the wayside. It's, you know, it's like Germany, you know, and all its refinement and everything, just you turn it upside down. Yes, the Nazis got into power, and then the whole German people were brutes, and there's nothing left of it. Hafeicha is, let's try to reconfigure it. Is it substantial? Is it the Chomer is good? Or is it just because at a particular angle, it happens to look like wood or whatever? It's interesting, of all the Umas, stone was the one that says Vayafoch. Stone itself, as opposed to Dor HaMabul, stone had a lot of laws, and they had a society that was very structured, and you know, one could look at it as a high degree of civilization. In other words, it's a country with laws and a government and authority and so on and so forth. It was something which, in terms of a tzura, of a form, it had a very, very strong form. Whereas the Dor HaMabul melted away because taiva is insubstantial, be'etzim. So vayimach is appropriate for Dor HaMabul because it's like when a person, no one mistakes a cushy life for being a noble life. We can just enjoy it, but it's not, it disintegrates on its own. It doesn't, you don't have to, I don't have to prove I enjoy a cushy life and I can sit and partake of it, but I'm not mistaking it for something good and great, noble, and so on. Masha'in Kain, something that is structured and has all sorts of, I mean, it's still had a lot of reasoning behind it. Why it is that they are like that, and what the values of their society, and so on. And so Akash Baruch Hu said, Hafoich, you know, Vayafoch, it was, it looks civilized from one side, it is totally not civilized from any other side, and its onesh is called Haficha. That's what he says. Hafeiches shoyim ve'enom. Kol zman shakadosh baruch hu mishapech. Hashem shoyim elim tkuma. Let's go to the Mashal Klal Yisrael that the Noiflim and the Kamim. It's like they have these dolls. I don't know what I forgot what they're called. They keep popping up. It's like they look like an English bobbleheads, maybe they're called or something like that. It's sort of it looks like an English policeman. I remember I bought for the kids once. It was like it looked like some sort of police. You push him down, and you hold to the floor, and then you step away, and he jumps back. And the reason is because the center of gravity is such that it's always going to come back to its upright position. Its upright position is what it is. That's its natural way of standing. So the Klal Yisrael's tkuma is because the be'etzim are always omdim. That's their metzias. What they are is what they are. So you can hold them down, but as soon as you let go, they snap back up again. Umasolam, as soon as you distort their situation, they're gone. I mean, one of the things about, if I can give a marshal from nature, which is extraordinary. In the human body, we have, much more human body, sorry. Anything that is living has in itself an inherent nature that it will always come back to its original. If you take a rock and you break it, nothing about the rock will reunite it unless somebody comes and cements it. But the rock itself is now, it turns to dust at some point because the pieces just disintegrate. But a plant, if you cut it, it will heal itself. If genes get messed up, there's a mechanism that tries to repair itself. And certainly, Balei Chayim or Adam, there is almost as if there's some sort of inner mechanism. There is an inner mechanism in the body that's always trying to repair the genes that are mutated or disrupted somehow. It is normal that in one in X amount of divisions, there will be distortions and breaks and stuff. And there's a mechanism that keeps fixing it. It has like a sort of prototype of what it's supposed to look like and keeps fixing it. It's incredible. That's because inherently, things that are living have a metzias of being a living thing. And anything that's trying to disrupt its life is, it keeps on writing itself. Klal Yisrael's metzias is a real metzias. And that's why, I mean, even after we have suffered so many attacks physically and on our ruchnias. I mean, go back way back when. The Chumash and Tanakh is full of Avodah Zarah. People complaining, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Stukim, Karoim, all sorts of Jews who converted en masse in Spain, because it was enticing. Forget about the nothing to do with persecution, had to do with, they were very into it. The reform movement, secular movement, everything. And yet, the true Klal Yisrael keeps surviving. It's a rock that drifts away from where it is, doesn't come back to where it goes, it just keeps drifting further and further. It'll never come back. There's nothing pulling a rock back to its original position or metzias. Klal Yisrael, same with other nations. Other nations drift with the times, and then they evolve from A to B to C to D, and that's how they go. Klal Yisrael is unique in physical survival, where no matter how many times they've been almost destroyed, they're here. And ruchnis is survival. No matter how many distortions and changes have been tried into it, it still stays over there. So the kinafalti kamti and the afirishem enem is a demonstration in the opposite between something that's emes lamita to something that pretends to be emes, but at its core it's not emes. It's contrived. It's an arrangement that happened to happen at a certain time or place, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu begins shaking things, and that which is solid through and through, there are no moving parts to it, and therefore shaking it doesn't do anything to it. Those are that have bits and pieces and parts slapped together, so that it looks, it might even look impressive, might even look more impressive, because you can do a lot more with things that are slapped together than things that are inherently XYZ. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes it such that we are, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sort of, it tests us in that way, and the fact that we come out, that shows that we're the emes and so on. Any questions?
Rabbi Lobansky, can I ask you questions when you're done?
Yes.
Off the tape?
Off the tape. I see you're scared of getting onto the tape, Matthew.
That's okay. The Hemshech is a new point, but it says, Ve'omer Ani Hashem Loshani.
So I would say that Va'oima Ani Hashem Lo Shanisi, I think what it means is that it's a repeat of it. In other words, no Uma ever survived a serious blow. And it's close, and it really, the way we're saying it, it sort of is another aspect of Klal Yisrael being a manifestation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not Kola, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Klal Yisrael is loichelisim. They've never, no blow ever has been mechala Klal Yisrael. So it's a repeat of the point, I think, but it's in that way, and it's a reflection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The next the hemshach afterwards about the visurim of the Torah and so on, that seems to be like he's saying it, that it's remedial. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does these things to give us the sense, to give us the warning and so on.
The Nefila, when it says Nefila, that's saying a Nefila in Ruchnius?
In the first one?
Yeah, but he saw Nefila only, that means that...
It's a combination of two. It's a combination of two. One leads the other. It's we're talking about physical, we're talking about physical, but they're reflections of a nefila in ruchnius. I don't think there's a distinction in that pasuk.
Okay.
So good Shabbos, and Matthew.
Shabbos. Thanks.
Shabbos. Sure.